from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Coming up on today's show, we're going to air part two of this two-part conversation I had with Javier Reyes, the host of Locked On Padres. Part one aired yesterday, so if you missed it, you can go back and listen to that, although it's not necessarily imperative that you listen to the first one before the second one. So if this is your first time listening to this two-part series, you can totally start with this one. And then if you feel like it, you can go back and listen to yesterday's show as well. So without further ado, here is part two of my conversation with Javier Reyes. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, despite the fact that they underperformed in 2019, and despite, you know, the Eric Hosmer contract, Will Myers being disappointing, Machado being disappointing in year one, that's basically the only, those are like the only big commitments that they have. And then so much youth coming, and then already a lot of talent at the major league level with, like you said, Tatis, Paddock, and others. So I'm wondering, the moves that they made this offseason, I thought they made some interesting moves. What was your thought? You know, you mentioned Hunter Renfroe. He was in that Tommy Pham deal, mm-hmm. right? So what was your thought on the acquisition of Pham, and then also the trade of Luis Urias to mm-hmm. the Brewers in getting Trent Grisham? Some interesting moves, and then the Drew Pomeranz signing. I know that's like a lot of questions baked into one, but basically offseason that they had, what do you think about those moves they made?
So there was a lot of moves made. And what's funny about it is there were so many moves made. I was a little bit surprised. And I think you remember right when I started doing the podcast, there was those little like mumblings about the Mookie Betts trade, right? And there was, it was like, oh man, if AJ Preller caps off everything that they've already done and acquires Mookie Betts, like he's going for it right now. I know people have been a little bit upset that the Padres, meaning the Padres fans and whatnot, that's like, oh, are you upset that they didn't get Mookie Betts? And it's kind of a weird question, because when it comes to trades for stars or trades in any kind of account, but in this case, when it comes for star players, you always assume that you have to give up a lot for someone like Mookie Betts, right? But I don't want to assume that we could have given more than the Dodgers did, because I don't, like, negotiations are weird. Maybe they asked us for Mackenzie Gore because they knew that that was the real prize to get, while they just asked for different players from other teams. And they were like, okay, the Padres aren't going to do it, so let's settle with Boston or whatnot. Or let's settle with the Dodgers for the Red Sox, I mean, who they want to get for him. So I don't want to always, like, kill GMs for that. It's still unfortunate because it would have been a great ad for the team. But in general, I mean, that's the thing, man. They kind of improved everywhere. I really like Trent Grisham. He's a guy who had that really blunderous mistake in the playoff last year, I believe, against the Cardinals when he was reaching for the ball. That was a disaster. And I feel like that's kind of his claim to not great fame and whatnot. But just throughout his entire minor league career, a really good on-base guy. Always been like above 360 on base. And that's what they need. We don't need a Hunter Renfroe getting on base at like a 290 clip. So that's already kind of an improvement. And then you look at the fact that he might hit for a decent amount of power, not a lot. And he's kind of a utility outfielder. He can play a couple positions. Maybe not great, as we saw in the playoffs, but at least he can play them, right? And then you look at Tommy Pham, who's just kind of a stud. I mean, this is one of those sneaky top 10 outfielders in the league, I think. I think that he's been good for a long time. And he's also been in some big scenarios with the Cardinals and what have you. So, and with the Rays last year, obviously. So that's a big get. And then you look at the pitching side of things. Nelson Lamet's coming back, but also Emilio Pagan from the Rays. And they gave up basically like some modest change on the surface with Manuel Margot. But it is a little weird because now I'm just rambling now. But with Manuel Margot, he was kind of the only center fielder that the team had. Right. So that's a little concerning, but I'm still a fan of being like, you know what? We got a good bullpen. We got Kirby Yates. We signed Drew Pomeranz, which is another thing that they did. And we got Matt Strom, who's pretty decent too. And all these guys. Now we're also going to get this guy, Emilio Pagan, from the Rays. We're just going to be like, yes, we're going for a bullpen thing. I sometimes wonder if the whole bullpen, having a dynamic bullpen, matters as much as people make it out to be. I think people look at Kansas City a lot, that wonder that they won the title, and I think that was a little bit of an outlier. Yes, you want to have that great bullpen, but I think it's more, this is just a complete non-numbers speculation on my point. I just think you don't want to have a bad bullpen when you're competing for the title. That's just my take, because I think that the Royals had like three of the best four relievers in all of baseball the year they won, which is an extremely unlikely scenario for most teams to be in. Anyways, so you do that, and you have Tommy Pham, you have Drew Pomeranz, Tatis, you're going to get a full year of Tatis now, or you know what I mean. You were going to get a full year of Tatis Jr. this year, and that's kind of the cool thing. And even guys like Francisco Mejia, who is, you know, he struggled in spring training, and I think spring training numbers are pretty stilly a lot of times. I know that some of the people listen to the podcast get upset that I don't talk more about some Padres deep inside type of stuff, but I honestly don't care about spring training, except for saying, oh, cool, that guy made the team. Cool. But other than that, Francisco Mejia could, I don't think it would take much for him to be better offensively than Austin Hedges, who batted maybe 120 last year. That's what it felt like. And
good framer,
defensively,
though.
Yeah, exactly. And Austin Hedges, you know, good defensive catcher, a wizard, some would say at the plate. Not by some, I mean like maybe just me, but he can't hit. And there comes a point when I don't care how well you are good defensively, you need to hit the ball. And if that doesn't work out, then they still have some prospects to look forward to. I know that there's been some kind of build up with Luis Campuzano, who's kind of risen in the prospect rankings for the Padres. So maybe he could be the catcher of the future if this doesn't work out. There's just a lot of contingency plans for this team, I think, overall. And it's not like if something doesn't work out, it's a disaster. They don't need to hope like the Angels. They don't need to hope that Mike Trout has another MVP season and that Anthony Rendon is awesome or else it's over. They don't need to, you know what I mean? It's not like, say, God forbid, some of the key players on the team get hurt, right? It's like, all right, maybe a lost season. But look, the future. You have the farm system. You have all this cool stuff. It's a team that I really think not enough people are talking about as being a sleeper, and that's why I kind of like, you know, hosting the podcast and talking about it.
Yeah, and I mean, I was out there singing their praises, saying I thought they would flirt with 500 in 2019, and they totally fell flat, and that was a little surprising. Mm-hmm. But I mean, given that the manager fell victim to that season, right? Andy Green was fired last year. I thought that was a little surprising. I thought it was surprising when they fired Bud Black and hired Andy Green in the first place. So I was wondering if you could talk about the turnover that we've seen with the managerial position. And then, of course, the new hire in Jace Tingler being a little outside the box. If you could just give your thoughts about that.
So personally, I would have liked if they hired a more established manager, just because I don't really... Now, the thing with managers is, and this is going to sound like someone doesn't know what they're talking about, I guess, but I have no idea, like, always what the impact a good manager makes. I know you guys had Bruce Bochy, which was awesome, right? And kind of the big names this offseason, like Dusty Baker and Joe Girardi and Joe Maddon, it was kind of like a sneaky big manager offseason. Like, there was a lot of new hires that were like big time people, like with the aforementioned names. So I was a little bit surprised that they didn't go out and get one of those guys. You know, if you're going to be firing guys kind of every year, it almost suggests you're looking for that right one. And instead you kind of get not a nobody, but kind of a guy who he doesn't have that allure, right? You don't, if Joe Maddon was managing this team, I think that it would have kind of blown up actually. And I think a lot of people would have been like having them as a division winner all of a sudden. And again, I don't necessarily know what the impact of a manager makes, but I think that it's a wait and see thing. I mean, if this guy turns out to be incredible, I mean, there's plenty of guys who are no names that end up becoming Hall of Fame managers, whether it be any sport, by the way. I mean, look at Bill Belichick. Like, that guy was kind of a nobody when he went to the Patriots, and then look where we are now, just miserable as sports fans. But in general, I think that Jace Tingler, wait and see. If the team underdelivers, like supremely underdelivers, not like they won 83 games and they had a lot of spark and maybe they had some injuries. If it's just straight up, like if they're worse than last year, which I think it would be harder for them to be worse last year than to be better this year. If that were to happen, then yes, it's like, oh no, like do we need another new manager? even if that happened, I don't want to fire another manager. I just hate that. It feels like scapegoating, to be perfectly honest with you. But I don't know. It's one of those wait and see things. I've heard good things about Jace Tingler so far. In general, I feel like they've surrounded Machado, like Ryan Flaherty's part of the team to a degree. Just former Orioles guys that they're kind of trying to have be like, look, you're still our guy, Machado, and we're going to also surround with people who you've worked before too.
All right, more of my conversation with Javier Reyes is coming up right after this. Do you hate stepping on the scale? Maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. A company called Withings produced the world's first smart scale, and they are still the best. In fact, Tom's Guide rated Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale in 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, willpower is key, but so is having the right tools. Withings smart scales are known for durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Step on and data from every weigh-in syncs automatically to the free app for iOS and Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Lots of smart scales don't have the Wi-Fi option, and it means you need to have your phone on you. But Withings Body Plus gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. The scale can support up to 8 users and even know who is who. So here's the deal. You can get 25% off a Withings Body Plus right now at withings.com for a very limited time. Go to withings.com, withings.com/MLB to get 25% off Body Plus Body Composition Scale. That's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off Body Plus Body Composition Scale. Shifting gears, I want to go way back in the timeline to 2010. I don't know if you were following the Padres way back in 2010.
I was aware of them, I guess I could say. Okay. I don't know what I was doing in 2010, to be honest. I think, well, I was just playing on my PlayStation, to be honest, the entire time of my 2010.
Well, maybe this isn't a great question, but from a Giants perspective, it was a big year between the Giants and the Padres. They were kind of duking it out for the division crown that ultimately went to the Giants on the last day of the season. There was a big series in San Francisco. Padres needed to sweep to, I think, tie the division, and they won the first two games of that series in San Francisco. So they were one game away from tying after 162. But of course, the Giants won that game, won the division, won the World Series, and it set off this three titles in 5 years run that they went on. But to the extent that you can, I'm wondering if you can talk about, maybe you can't, but like what that was like for the Padres in that 2010 battle and then missing out and the disappointment. And have they made the postseason since? I don't think they have, right?
I don't believe so, no. I could be wrong about that, but no. It's basically just been Dodgers and Giants for life, practically.
Yeah.
So where I would start is, one, just I guess I could have some fun with this. I definitely wasn't as in tune. I started being more in tune with the Padres as being like, because I grew up a Yankee fan, being in New Jersey and whatnot, and my family is full of Yankee nuts, right? That I was like, I kind of feel like branching out a little bit. Part of me was like, I'm going to go Oakland because I love Moneyball. And that's how I pick teams sometimes. And I started following them a little bit more like 2014, beginning of 2015, kind of when this whole era of like they're just actually going to go for things now. And they made the crazy trades for Upton and whatnot, which I mentioned earlier. But in 2010, if I'm not mistaken, that was one of the years the Padres were like one of the elite teams in the league, actually. And they had this epic collapse,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
Right. They lost like 11 games in a row in late August or September.
So it's funny because while I wasn't paying attention, I wasn't yet considering them as a team. I was very aware, actually, now that you mentioned that, you confirmed for me this year. It was nuts. I remember being in a hotel room and I would think I was with my mom and we were just like, what the heck? Like, you feel bad. Like, this is not, it's not like this is a team that's won a lot before. This isn't the Yankees. If this happened to the Yankees, everyone would be like, great. If this happened to Boston, if this happened to, I don't know, Houston now, right? This would be great. This would be awesome. But the Padres, you just feel bad because it was this kind of fun, quirky team that all of a sudden just had this epic collapse. They had like a 7-game lead like heading into September. And then, like you said, the like 11-game losing streak. It was a big story in sports, I remember. It was so, that really speaks volumes to it. The fact that I knew about the collapse despite not being in tune with the Padres, that's really when you know that it was an epic collapse. And I don't know. It's it's sad because from what I understand is this is kind of something Padres fans are sort of used to. I mean, they had those kind of mid-2000s runs when they still had Trevor Hoffman and guys like that. But even those teams were good, but they were flawed, and they made the playoffs somehow 1 year with just like 82 wins, which I was checking out the other day. And then the year after that, they were pretty good, but they get beat by the Cardinals. They get swept by them 1 year. So it's always been this team that you don't want to get too excited about, right? And that's what's funny is I guess that maybe that's when people listen to the podcast, they hear my optimism. They're like, oh, you're new. you haven't been through the rigmarole, you know? You haven't been through the struggle. And to that, I say I sort of have because I'm a Chargers fan. So I'm used to teams that always have a promise. Or the Chargers, I think, have been a more promising team for like a decade. I think they've always had talent with Philip Rivers at quarterback. But I'm used to the idea of never get excited about your team. That's kind of where the Padres, I think, are, where it's you never want to get too excited no matter who's on the team. But I can't help it. And so what? Maybe I'm ignorant, but I'm excited for where they're heading right now, and I hope that they can kind of break that curse. And you know what? Why not? The Mets were in the World Series a few years ago. The Royals won the World Series. The Astros won the World Series. Like, it's kind of a time for change, and it's not just Yankees and Red Sox anymore or what have you. We're kind of seeing, I feel like, that there's ways to make the title. You know, there's ways to go for it. And I think that there's, in general, it's not just based off of let's go to big market anymore when it comes to free agents. I think that people can brand themselves. I know you see this in the NBA a lot, but, and now I'm just going on a whole tangent. But yeah, I really have hope for the season. And even if things don't go perfectly well, this isn't a team that I think has a downside that's in the basement where you're like, oh my God, like that's it. We're done. And I quit. You know, this isn't one of those teams that's like that.
Yeah, and the Giants honestly felt like that type of team before they won it in 2010. They were just kind of an underdog. People always wrote them off. And even when they made the postseason, everybody picked against them to lose all those different series that they've been in. They've basically been picked against every time they've been in a postseason series. And of course, they won all those series in 10, 12, and 14. So last question for you, just, is there anything you're wondering about the Giants, and or what are your thoughts on the Giants? I know you mentioned it a little bit in the open, but kind of just Giants related, Giants Padres, any thoughts or questions or just general feelings about them?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I'm one of those people, I hate this idea that you have to hate everyone in your division. I think that's stupid. I think it's a contrived belief. Yes, if you like the Cubs, you probably don't like the White Sox, or you don't like the Cardinals, right? Like that's a little bit, but there's like more history to it. I really like the Giants. Like, I really do. They were one of my teams that I was kind of considering as being my second to the Yankees. And one of the reasons for that was they kind of had this, like, they reminded me of, like, the Spurs of baseball. And I think we talked about this on my podcast, like a month ago or what have you. They just had this way of building. They had this thing where you never could count them out. Because why? And people would always answer that question. They would just be like, because they're the Giants. You know, the Cardinals have a little bit of that too, where you could know nothing about the team. You're just like, they're the Giants. They're going to find a way to kind of come back. And even last year, they played over their head to a degree. Weren't a playoff team by any measure, but I think a lot of people were expecting to win like 54 games or something crazy like that, right? And instead, they were better than the Padres somehow. So, but I love Hunter Pence. Hunter Pence is like one of my favorite players in the entire league. And I know that he's back with the team for almost seemingly a kind of like a little bit of a farewell kind of deal, because it was, that's really where he made his fame and whatnot, him and his dorky looking swing. And I'm a big fan of his. And, you know, the other thing is Bruce Bochy, the manager, used to be the manager of the Padres. So there's this thing where I kind of have a kingship, a liking to them. And I know that I wasn't back in the 96 to 07 range. I forgot when the Giants hired Bruce Bochy, but I know I was completely like not paying attention to kind of sports in general back then, but it's still kind of cool. And that's why I have just a giant respect for the Giants. No pun intended. but yeah, I just think that this is one of those years where the Giants, they're taking the back seat, but I'm sure they'll be back, and I'm sure there's going to be some random player probably that pops up for them and does well. I don't even know who's on the team anymore at this point, but I don't know what to say, man. It's going to be interesting, and it's interesting to see that this is kind of one of those divisions this year that it's arguably has the biggest favorite in it next to maybe the AL East with the Yankees. I'd say that the Dodgers are probably projected to be the best team in baseball, but I still think there's a lot more depth in this division than people realize. And there's a lot more intrigue, even with teams that aren't great. The Giants, they're the Giants, like I said before. Yastrzemski, is his power numbers that he showed last year, will he be able to keep that up and be kind of a sudden superstar or what have you, right? Are the Rockies going to trade Arenado? That's not a positive thing for the Rockies, but it's still something to follow. And then the Diamondbacks, they signed Madison Bumgarner. They have all these offensive titans on their team. What are they going to do? Are the Padres going to bounce back and what have you? So I just think in general, the division is one to watch for this year.
That's right. And a lot of good minor league talent in the division as well. Not just the Padres, but the Diamondbacks, the Giants, the Dodgers all have good minor league systems as well at this point. Anyway, Javier from Locked On Padres, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, man. I had a blast.
Okay, and that wraps up my conversation with Javier Reyes from Locked On Padres. Really hope you enjoyed this conversation. It's something that we plan to continue to do throughout this hiatus in Major League Baseball, is just continue to talk with other hosts and guests. Really thankful to Javier for taking the time to join the show. Hope you enjoyed our conversation. I know that Javier has reached out to me since and talked about wanting to look back even further on that 2010 race between the Giants and the Padres. So that's something that's in the works down the road. Remember, to get this show every weekday, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspic. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Kaspic. That's K-A-S-P-I-C-K. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Giants. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On MLB. Thanks for listening, and until then, we'll see you next time.